I got to thinking when I did some TV the very first time, I remember we were doing something for the Family Channel. And this lady said, now this is live. There'll be like 3 million people see this. Does it bother you? I said, I can't see them. Don't bother me at all, ma'am. You know, I can remember a producer telling me, you're one of the few people that we get a camera in front of, you never change. And I said, ma'am, I ain't changed socks in a week. Why change and be something you're not? You know?
Hey everyone, welcome to How Success Happens. I'm Dan Bova, writer and editor at entrepreneur.com. So let me just start by saying, if you're hungry, I'm going to suggest press pause, go have a snack, and then come back, because today's chat is going to kill you otherwise, because I am talking with a man who knows his way around a steak. I'm talking with cowboy Kent Rollins, a real deal cowboy who turned his knack for feeding hungry ranchers into a wildly popular YouTube channel, a TV show on the Outdoor Channel, and his own line of cookbooks, seasonings, pots and pans, and all that stuff. So please join me in the comments. Give a big yeehaw to Cowboy Kent.
Well, thank you, Dan, so much, brother. It is my pleasure to be here. Cooking is something that's always come pretty natural to me. So if people want to tune in and get hungry, hey, I'm all for it.
So let me ask you this. So you're originally born and raised from Brooklyn, right? And then you like kind of put this whole thing together. It's pretty convincing.
Yeah, pretty, a little, probably about 1900 miles southeast of there, you know, or southwest, I'm sorry.
Before we get into the cooking and all that fun stuff, why don't we get into the fun stuff of you?
All right.
Tell us about Cowboy Ken. How did this phenomenon come to be?
You know, I was raised southwest Oklahoma, pretty close to the banks of the Red River. Farm and ranch operation. We were poor as dirt, but Mama made sure we eat pretty good. We raised some cattle, done a little farming, but we found out that the kitchen was not just a place to cook. It was a place to where people sat down and eat and visited every day. And you talked about life's problems and maybe how you could fix them. But it was always done over a meal of some sort. And my mother used to always say before we blessed the meal, it's not the legs of the table that hold it up. It is the family that is gathered around it. And we always learned that there was strength in numbers. And we made sure then, and I wish it was that way now, there was always holding a fork and a knife. There's too many people at the table now holding a cell phone. I wish people would put it down and just go back to eating. But my mother taught me to cook at an early age. Sometimes it was a lot warmer in a kitchen than it was a horseback, you know, when it was 10 degrees. Right. So I thought cooking was all right. Always helped her in the kitchen when I could, especially around the holiday time. We were pretty busy. We'd have folks over. From that, went to guide and elk hunters in the southwest New Mexico in the mountains and learned to cook really there in cast iron and Dutch ovens. Food cooks a lot different at elevation. You know, when I come from 1,800 foot and then you go to cooking at 8,000 foot, there's a lot of things that factor into that, which mostly is elevation and humidity. And bread don't rise as good. Takes longer to boil a pot of beans, and nobody taught me this stuff. It was all trial and error, and I think that's really how you learn the best is if you burn your finger, you know it's hot. You won't do it the second time.
Right.
You know, so it's something that when I got out of there from guiding hunters, I'd worked on ranches, eat off some old chuck wagon cooks. Some were decent, some were bad, but I bought a wagon late in '91 after my dad died. And went to cooking on ranches. Back then, there was no such thing as social media or any of this. Word of mouth and a full stomach kept me busy. I could start in February and cook on ranches from south to north all the way to November, you know. So my mother told me one time I'd been gone, not consecutive days, but that year I'd put in about 240 nights at a chuck wagon and sleeping in a teepee and a bedroll.
Wow.
She said, didn't you miss me? I said, I did, Mama, but the thing that I miss most was a sit-down toilet, a stand-up shower, and carpet.
I love that. You know, that we meaning me, or people maybe that live in New York, we have this fantasy about being out there in the wild and, you know, being on horseback. And I don't know, it's like 45 degrees out today when we're recording this, and I was walking my dog this morning, and I was like, I felt like I was freezing to death. So, like, I don't know if I would have made a very good cowboy.
Well, you know, it's...
To succeed in the future of work, forward thinkers use AI to deliver measurable results. Workday is the AI platform for HR and finance that frees you from the mundane so you can focus on more meaningful work. Workday, moving business forever forward.
I'm glad that people are drawn to the cowboy, though it was whether film or real life or something you just dreamed about of being. The cowboy was always an American icon. People wanted to be like him or do something that he did. But it's so much different in the real world than what it is you might see on a movie screen. They're the most respectful, most polite people I've ever been around in my life that have the values that were instilled in them to know that they are stewards of the land first, and they take care of cattle and family. God always is present the first thing, but it's a lifestyle I'd never change.
How do you know if what you made was good if they're always polite and smiling?
They'll come back and fill it up second time and a third time.
Okay.
When you try a recipe, and cowboys are great experimentation because they ain't got nowhere else to eat. I mean, you're 70 miles from town, you know. So you know if they come back twice and even a third time, you better write that recipe down. It's worth having.
Right. What if they only come back or they don't come back? What do you do with that recipe?
I've never had that happen.
Okay.
You know, I've been on some old wagons to where you were polite. I mean, the cook fixed something that was really unedible or not good. You didn't tell him. You just went around there behind the tree somewhere and scraped your plate out, and you just went hungry.
So let me ask you this. Obviously, you're an incredibly authentic person, and you speak and dress the way you speak and dress. But I'm curious, as you started to gain notoriety and you've got the TV show, I wonder, did anyone try to slip in and try to Hollywood you up at all? Did anyone give you some ridiculous advice about maybe your beard, maybe your mustache should be shorter, or you shouldn't wear a hat or anything like that?
No, not really in what we're doing now with the TV show and our YouTube channel. You know, we got called by producers a lot for many years, and they would say, hey, we have the perfect show for you. And I'd say, you know, you're too much reality and we're too much real. People can spot a counterfeit 100 miles away. Just be what you are every day and try to do it better than anybody else, and you'll never have a job.
So your YouTube channel, you've got about three and a half million subscribers. Talk me through that. When did you decide to start the YouTube show, and how long did it take for you to start building this huge audience?
I would say we probably started it 12 years ago, maybe 11. We were on a ranch in New Mexico that is 295,000 acres. We were there 6 weeks. Shan took a little camcorder, and Shannon is my most beautiful, hardworking wife I've ever seen in my life. And she just went to filming every day that we was doing something, and we'd make little episodes. And we decided that we'd put one of them up one time just to sort of advertise and see what happened. And we never did really be consistent at that time. There wasn't just one video and then another and then another one. And then we put another one up on cooking schools that we did. And then we finally learned, as producers kept calling us and saying, hey, we have a show for you. We thought, no, we have our own show on YouTube. We're in control of our content. We can say, let's pray for somebody, or God bless America. We're not offending anybody, but we want to keep it true and real and authentic to what it is. And be consistent, because if you can set up, it's just like feeding cows. In the wintertime, you feed cows and you're going to feed them of a morning, they know you're going to be there. If you're going to do a YouTube video and you want to be a success and have it be something that will grow and grow, be consistent, just like feeding them cows. Have a video that comes out a certain time every week where people know. And we finally figured that out. And I remember when we got our first play button that was 100,000 subscribers, we're thinking, I don't even know 100,000 people.
Right.
You realize how far you can reach with a channel.
Yeah.
You know, it's the greatest platform, I think, that there is to really connect with fans. Because I'd done a lot of food TV at the time, too. and people would recognize you from that. But with YouTube, it's a whole lot more interaction.
When did this idea to be in front of the camera and talk to people? Obviously, you're a great talker. You have great stories, have incredible expressions. Like, when did it dawn on you, like, hey, maybe more than just the people around me might like this?
Well, first of all, I need people to know I made a D in high school in speech. I hated to get up in front of people. You know? But after my dad passed away, and I realized that sometimes you have to step out of your comfort zone. And I've told people this a lot. If it doesn't challenge you, it will never change you in life. I got to thinking when I did some TV the very first time, I remember we were doing something for the Family Channel a long time ago. And this lady said, now this is live. There'll be like 3 million people see this. Does it bother you? I said, I can't see them. Don't bother me at all, ma'am. And it come pretty easy. You know, I can remember a producer telling me, you're one of the few people that we get a camera in front of, you never change. And I said, ma'am, I ain't changed socks in a week. Why change and be something you're not?
That's great. So now you famously beat Bobby Flay. How long did he cry when the cameras turned off?
Well, it was about 97 degrees that day when Bobby came. I didn't know he was coming. He was ready to go home when he got there, I think, because of the heat that was happening. I think he thought he was a little out of place. And I don't really even remember him saying bye. He just got in the vehicle.
Oh, really?
You know? So I think he was in a hurry to get away. But, you know, it's good to have him there. He's welcome if he wants to come back, you know.
Right.
I will tell him this. Ain't nothing changed. It's still hot and it's still heavy.
You said when the cameras turn on, you weren't nervous and it just felt natural. When you have been nervous, or if you've ever been nervous, is there anything that you do to kind of calm yourself down?
Yeah, when I first did Chopped Grill Masters, I don't know how long it was, probably 10 years ago, 15. Something I'd never done was a food competition. And this was the Food Network's largest outdoor production at the time. And they took 15 chefs across the United States and one cowboy. And I was a little nervous, didn't know about Chopped, anything about it. Finally watched the episode and I told Shan, I said, these people are crazy. I ain't never heard of these groceries in my life. You know, nobody buys this stuff. But she told me, when you feel fire, you'll be okay. But the thing that calms my mind if I'm ever in any kind of stressful situation is to think of her. The amount of love that we have for each other, what we share every day together. And I just think about the most peaceful places we've ever been. And that's always usually been with a chuck wagon to look out across 200,000 or 300,000 acres. And it's just pleasant, you know. And that's just get back to reality of what you are, not what you're trying to be.
Oh, that's beautiful. Have you ever had a cook-off challenge with Shannon?
No, we've never cooked against each other. We've had so much. We catered for a long time, too, in between cooking for ranches, and we'd feed thousands of people in a year. But there was never a wasted motion after I taught her really what went on at the wagon. This is the way you bake biscuits. This is how you make pies. This is how you make a cobbler. And she knew where I was going to be, and I knew where she was going to be. And because when she first come along, she didn't cook at all. And she feels probably more adapt to cooking outside than she does inside. She's a great baker in a Dutch oven, but she's a great baker in the house too.
So talk to me a little bit about, so when you are cooking, your hands are literally in it. You're making it happen. But when we start to talk about products like seasoning and your books and the pans, like there's a lot of people involved. So how do you manage that from going from the guy who's literally, you know, buttering the biscuits to like trusting a lot of people who are not directly in your sight to carry out what you want them to carry out?
I've always believed in a team. And a team to me was a team of horses that I hooked to a wagon to pull it. And it was a team I had to trust. Because if they run off or they turn that wagon over, you're out of business. I never do judge people. My dad taught me a long time ago, you don't judge a man by the hat he wears on his head or the clothes he wears. You see what's in his eyes and you feel what's in his heart by his handshake. and it's always been true. We have a great book agent, and she sort of steered us in the cookbook world. A lot of people have ghost writers. They bring in people to take pictures. They help you with everything. Me and Shan didn't want that. We wanted the cookbooks to be totally us. All the recipes were ours, all the stories I wrote, all the pictures she took, because it's a process to where when we get it done, we want to say, this is more than a cookbook. This is a book of life, because there's so many great stories and pictures in there. And we have folks that work for us that ship product. We have folks that make our product. But they have the same values that we do. They know at the end of the day, I've done the best that I can do to make sure that when I fulfill this order or I make this product, that Kent and Shannon would be proud of me. And that's what it's about.
That's great. So how do you go about finding people like that? That's the dream. People that care as much about what you're doing as you do.
I think a lot of that, and I don't mean this bad towards anybody, comes from rural America. You know, there's a lot of little small places, especially where I grew up. Sherry that works for us lives in a little small town that was 28 miles from where we used to live. And she knows what we want out of this business. Good Christian folks that know, hey, I'm gonna do this today because I know it's going to be right. And we've teamed up with people that we've worked with, done collabs with and everything else. And they want what we want out of it. And that is not only to better us, but to put forth an image out there that we're not ashamed of.
That's great. Wow. All right. So talk to me about these recipes. For someone who's just getting to know you, maybe this is their introduction to you and your cooking. Tell them what recipe to try first, the thing that's going to flip the switch for them.
Well, if you're wanting to cook outside in a Dutch oven, the first thing you should think about baking is cornbread. Cornbread is the easiest thing to put together. If you don't want to make it homemade, follow the directions on the sack. You know, it's pretty easy. But when you bake something in a Dutch oven, there's coals underneath which have heat. There's coals on top which has the heat. But cornbread will tell you when it's nearly done. Everything separates as you cook from the outside walls of what you're cooking it in. It'll begin to shrink, and cornbread shrinks higher than anybody. Now, do we just have plain cornbread? No, most of the time it's got green chilies, cheese, maybe some hominy in it. We'll mix in there on occasion, or spicy sausage. Cornbread can be a complete meal, but when you master what you can cook in a Dutch oven, because anything you can cook in the house, you can cook outside. And there's a few things I won't cook, and it's just things that I can't spell. If it's food that's got a weird name, I'm probably not going to cook it.
But okay.
We do a lot of casseroles. There's a baked bean casserole, just ground beef and onions, a few jalapenos. Then you just pour some canned beans in there, let it cook. Serve that with some fried potatoes and cornbread. Make you some homemade apple pie for lunch. It's pretty good eating.
Oh, man. See, this is what I was talking about in the beginning. If you're hungry, like you're dying right now. All right, Cowboy Kent, now is the time of the show where we enter the speed round. I think you can handle it, so let's get going. So let me ask you, what is a habit that you are happy that you have, and is there a habit you wish you could ditch?
I don't know if I've ever had habits. I have pleasures in life. And the thing that I pleasure the most is being with Shan and cooking when the weather is really right. I'm talking a day that might be 45, 50 degrees to where a fire actually feels really good. You're looking across wide open spaces. There's nothing in sight but just God's green earth and Mother Nature. But the other bad part of it, too, is a habit, if you call it a habit, is having to cook when it's 117 degrees before you build that fire.
Right.
You know, I had a heat stroke in 96. Took me a while to get over.
But, oh, man.
I don't know. There's if you go about it right in life, I don't think there's anything you really need to change because it's there for a reason.
That's awesome. I love that. What is something or is there anything that most people seem to love but you secretly can't stand, whether that's food or social media or anything?
For food, I would say cottage cheese.
Oh, really? Okay.
No. You know, My mother ate it growing up, but I see so many people eat it now, and Shan does at times. She'll take cottage cheese, really high protein, you know, mix it with turkey or something, and I'm thinking, why didn't you just have a hamburger and some French fries? You know, we could have made this deal pretty easy. And I think if it's people-wise, it's just the people that are, I won't say complainers, but they're negative people. They never look at what it could be. They look about what it wasn't. This didn't happen. This wasn't going to happen. And the only way you can make something happen in life is to get in there and get dirty and try it. You know, I've always heard people say, and I believe this, and I told a man a long time ago, there's people that read stories in life. Don't read the story. Be what the story's about.
I love that. That's fantastic. I was just about to ask you, too, on YouTube, you're talking about the comments, and you pray for your viewers if they request it. Yes. You've got this beautiful back and forth with your audience. I wonder, you know, as you were kind of developing your show and developing everything, was there any mentors who were really instrumental that maybe told you something or showed you something that really kind of flipped the switch for you, that really put you in the right direction?
That would be my mother. A lot of people say, what chef inspired you to cook or be who you are? I said, she didn't have the title of chef. She had the title of my mother. She taught me, cook what you love for the ones you love. And cook because you enjoy it. Because the joy of cooking is not really cooking the food. It's watching the people eat it. And so many times on a ranch, when I know them guys have been out there and it's been 3 degrees all day and the wind and snow been beating them to death, and they can come into where the wagon is and it's got tarps all around where they're eating and it's warm in there, and you sit down and they take that first bite of the very most tenderest ribeye they ever seen in their life, and you see that smile come on their face. That's what cooking is.
I love, so you just said the word tender. So yeah. Anyone who's experimented on, you know, sometimes we nail it and sometimes we do not. What are the secrets of nailing the tender steak?
Well, first of all, it depends on what you're buying. Are you buying select, choice, prime, whatever it is? You know, I always take lime juice and I'll squeeze on a ribeye. The acid in the lime juice breaks down connective tissue in the meat, which is going to make it tender. And I do all this 4 to 5 hours in advance if it's just a steak. Go ahead and season it with our original seasoning. Put it in an ice chest, let it set. But I always bring it out about 30 to 40 minutes ahead of time to let that steak warm up. It's a more even cook. You're not shocking the meat as much. I always told people, if you got 3 teeth or you got a mouthful, you can eat my steak.
I love it, and finally how are you having your steak, rare, medium, or well done?
Well, he done died once. I ain't gonna kill him twice. I like a steak that's rare, right at the edge of medium rare. You know, if it's a fillet, it's always going to be pretty close to rare. I eat a lot of wild game. I cook a lot of wild game. It's always going to be rare, you know. But I've had people when I catered say, hey, I can't do that. Can you cook mine well done? I said, I can't, but here's the tongs. I said, I'll have to watch you do it from a distance, man.
I love it. I love it. You know, we talked about the YouTube show, obviously. Is that the best way for people to keep up with everything that you and Shannon are up to?
Yeah, I mean, we have a large presence, I guess what you could call, on social media, from Facebook to Instagram to YouTube. You know, the Cast Iron Cowboy comes on Monday nights. I think it's 8:30 Central Time. We've already filmed the second season. It'll be out next year, probably September. We're pretty close to maybe finalizing a third season, so we'll see what happens. But it's YouTube every Wednesday at 2:30 Central.
Well, this has been really great talking to you. A lot of fun. And I'm making a steak tonight. You've inspired me.
There you go, brother. I've got great faith in you. You know what I mean?
I don't. There was a little. I don't quite believe that one. You want to try that again?
I do have faith in you. That's what I mean. I have people that tell me they'll get on YouTube and they'll make a comment and they'll say, you know, I've never cooked in my life, but you've inspired me to cook. I said, I have faith in you not only being a cook, but being a great cook.
Well, this is great, Kent. Really, really great talking to you.
It's my pleasure, Dan. And you're welcome in camp anytime.
Oh, I'd love it.
Looking for a more affordable way to own in 2026? With shared ownership at Latimer Homes, you can reserve your new home for just £26 before the 26th January. Lower upfront costs, modern, stylish homes, and a clearer path onto the property ladder, making it easier than ever to step into home ownership. Find out more at latimerhomes.com. T's and C's apply.